USANA.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up on the first part of today's program, we're going to take a look at the environmental record of our new governor, Ron DeSantis. In his first few weeks in office, DeSantis has made several major announcements about protecting the environment. He wants to spend $2.5 billion, the equivalent of 3% of the state budget, over the next 4 years to help restore water quality. The funding will primarily go to restoration and protection of the Everglades. In addition to the big pot of money, the governor will appoint a task force to find the cause of the algae bloom afflicting Lake Okeechobee and the waters that flow from it, the Caloosahatchee and the St. Lucie estuary systems. He wants to speed up the building of a proposed reservoir south of Lake Okeechobee that will be the settling out site for discharge from the polluted lake. DeSantis also wants to establish the Office of Environmental Accountability and Transparency and hire a chief science officer. The governor plans to revive the idea of replacing septic tanks with water utility lines via a matching grant program involving local governments, create the Office of Resilience and Coastal Protection to prepare coastal communities for dealing with rising sea levels, and oppose offshore drilling and fracking in the heart of the state. And the new governor has called for the resignations of the members of the governing board of the South Florida Water Management District. He said the board needed a fresh start after approving a lease for sugar growers to farm the area that's already been targeted for the reservoir next to Lake Okeechobee. So the question is, do we have a new kind of governor who cares about the environment? We're joined now by Frank Jackalone, who is the Florida chapter director of the Sierra Club. And Frank, welcome back to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rob. Glad to be here.
All right. So, Frank, that's quite a list, I think it's fair to say. And I don't think that, I saw you quoted as saying that he's accomplished more in a week than the previous governor accomplished in the entire 8 years.
Yeah, but that's not saying much. You know, Governor Scott really did not do much at all. He was a hindrance and harmful on a lot of things. He, when Governor Scott came into office, the very first thing he did was say, I'm going to put an end to the high-speed rail that has been negotiated by Senator Bill Nelson and has been approved by President Obama that would run from Tampa to Orlando. It was all set. The money was there. They were ready to do groundbreaking. And the first thing Scott did said, I'm canceling that. The second thing he did is said, I'm canceling Charlie Crist's plan for the Everglades, in which Crist had reached a deal with the U.S. Sugar Corporation that they would sell all of their land and assets to the state for Everglades restoration. That was historic. And Scott said no. So the contrast between someone who was harmful to the environment versus DeSantis then coming out in his first couple of days saying, number one, that we recognize that nutrient pollution is harming Florida's waters. All right, that probably was the biggest thing that he did of all, because it was the complete opposite of Rick Scott, who was denying it, who just avoided the issue of water pollution. He would talk about red tide, but only in terms of what can we do to add more pollution into the water to try to dissolve or attack the red tide. So we give DeSantis high marks for coming out at the start to define the problem and to do it in a positive way. That is not the same thing, though, as doing something. You can't do something in your first few days of office. When you call for the resignation of the members of the South Florida Water Management District Governing Board, that's a good thing, but most of them didn't resign. So you really haven't changed policy at the Water Management District yet. So the proof here will be what kind of muscle is he going to use now to force them out so that Big Sugar no longer has control of that Water Management District Governing Board.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the Governor Scott and Governor DeSantis when it comes to the water management boards. When Governor Scott was in power, did he decimate the staff of water management boards across the state?
Oh, he did. He decimated them. He He took control. I mean, he did not have the authority.
Why does that matter to the environment? Why does that matter to the environment?
Because it's the directors of the water management district that actually spend the time to put together the plans that will address the environment or not. And then they bring those recommendations to the governing board. Theoretically, the governing board appoints the person who will be the director of that water management district. But Scott made it very, very clear that he was in control and that they were going to appoint the person that he handpicked. And quite often, he put, you know, people in who just kind of did, you know, slash and burn for their water management
district. So if this new governor were to prove his environmental bona fides, he would change the nature of the directors of the water management district, and he would restore some of the staff? Is that right?
That would be one thing. He would have to put really good people. I mean, he should first put good people into place in the governing boards who are the people who have the legal authority to appoint the staff. He should put scientists on the board, not just have one person who is a science officer for the state, but he needs scientists on the board of these governing boards who know things about water quality. So that's, you know, we're waiting to see what he does on these appointments. He's had, you know, some trouble with appointments recently. His Secretary of State had to resign. You know, you talk about enforcement of environmental laws in Florida. Well, we still had the same crew at the Florida Department of Environmental Protection that we did under Governor Scott. Is that group going to be willing to now enforce the law when they didn't do it when they were working for Governor Scott? The test really is yet to come on whether DeSantis makes the right appointments and whether he instructs them to do things that are real. I want to point out something. Yesterday, Governor DeSantis had a big announcement that is that could be contrary to everything he's done on the environment so far. He held an event to announce a Florida deregathon. He said that he's going to ensure a brighter future for Florida's economy, and that he's asking all of his agency heads now to come up with new rules that we will deregulate Florida's economy. He's saying that there are harmful regulations that are costly, stifle competition, limit our labor pool. Now, when I hear that, this sounds just like Rick Scott. If he starts deregulating our environmental rules, then we are not going to be able to improve our air and water quality.
We're talking with Frank Jacalone of the Sierra Club here in Florida about the environmental record of our new governor, Ron DeSantis. And this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And if you've got a comment, you can email us here in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. All right, so when we hear the word regulation, oftentimes that's an environmental regulation or some sort of health protection regulation.
That's right.
Okay, so it's not just simply bureaucratic steps. It's something that actually offers protection to either people or the landscape. I want to ask you about the Everglades. He says that he wants to spend $2.5 billion restoring the Everglades. Can he just do that by himself, or does he need the legislature to do that?
That's another example. So, you know, this again was a trick that Rick Scott often used. He would promise money for this project or that, but he didn't have the authority to give that money. The money has to be appropriated by the legislature. Also, DeSantis hasn't given us a breakdown of what that $2.5 billion will pay for. We are afraid at the Sierra Club that most of that money is going to pay for very expensive, high-tech water storage projects in the Everglades, like this 23-foot-high Everglades Reservoir, or aquifer storage and recovery wells north of Lake Okeechobee that would pump water down and risk polluting the Floridan aquifer. So these are the kinds of things that, when he says it's Everglades restoration, we nearly need to see what he means. The right Everglades restoration is to buy land from the sugar industry, at a good price, but buy that land that can then be used to restore wetlands, to clean the water, and send it south to Everglades National Park again. We don't know if he plans to do that or not.
Is it clear right now that all those toxic red tide outbreaks and the toxic algae outbreaks, does science establish that they are directly correlated to nutrients like pollution and runoff from farms, fertilizer, that sort of thing?
Right.
It is. It is.
So it's a combination. It's the fertilizers that are applied to farms and our lawns. It is septic tanks that are leaking. It is sewage systems that are failing in cities like St. Petersburg and Tampa and Clearwater that caused the release of millions of gallons of sewage into our waterways. It is all of this combined that is adding nutrients that feed these harmful algae blooms, whether it's blue-green or red tide.
All right, so based on your reading of the governor so far, does he have a plan to attack those problems?
I haven't seen a plan. I have seen him define the problem, which is one step ahead of Rick Scott, but I haven't seen a plan. The only, he's going to convene a kind of a red tide, blue ribbon commission. Again, that's the same thing that Rick Scott proposed. So we'd like to see the plan.
We're talking with Frank Jackalone. He's the Florida chapter director of the Sierra Club, and this is WMNF 88.5 FM. Frank, one of the treasures of Florida are the springs, and the springs are not what they used to be.
Right.
But if you go to Itchituckney or if you go to Rainbow Springs, you go to one of the dozens and dozens of springs that we have, it's still the Wekiva. There's some still pretty good kayaking and swimming, and they can be beautiful, although there are more grasses on the bottom and more algae in these springs in the rivers that flow from them. The governor has not mentioned springs. How important is spring restoration to protecting Florida's environment?
So basically, more than half of Florida is in Florida's spring sheds. Then the rest is in the Everglades ecosystem. The springs are essential for us. They feed our rivers. They make our Florida's waters warmer. And, they're just so, so important. And if you pollute and you contaminate our springs, you cut off the water from the springs, that affects all of North and Central Florida. It really destroys our environment. And so we have to protect the springs.
Well,
unfortunately, they're being shortchanged by the state right now.
How are they being?
The money is going to Everglades.
How are they being shortchanged?
Well, the funds that the state has appropriated through the legislative process is far less than is needed to restore our springs. You have to be able to buy land to clean water. You have to be able to enforce the laws that stop big chicken manure farms. Chicken CAFOs in the northern part of the state, which are releasing manure into our streams and our waters and our springs. There's a lot that needs to be done, and it takes money. You have to address the septic problem in North Florida as well.
And what about pumping from the aquifer? Do we overpump from the aquifer, and does that lessen the amount of fresh water that goes into Florida's springs?
Yes, we do. We certainly are overpumping in the aquifer, and that is impacting the springs. The springs, the water flow into the springs is declining. If we continue to give more consumptive use permits in the northern part of the state, those springs are going to dry up. So we have a desperate situation, and the state needs to make this give as much attention to this as they do to the Everglades.
We're talking about the governor of Florida and his environmental record in the first few days in office, and this is WMNF in Tampa. Frank Jackalone, the Florida chapter director of the Sierra Club, is with us. You mentioned septic tanks. I think the governor says he has a plan to revive the idea of replacing septic tanks with water utility lines. So he's going to hook everybody up. People are not going to have septic tanks. Or I don't know, I read into that he's going to hook everybody up. There have to be septic tanks from the Panhandle to the Keys, from the East Coast to the West Coast. They got to be all over. That would be a huge undertaking for the state to hook everybody up and take them off a septic tank, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. So it needs to be a combination of state funds, of private funds from the homeowners, and from the local counties and cities. You know, people did not expect new regulations, so we can't expect them to pay the entire cost of replacing their septic systems. But it's going to require a concerted effort by all of us to get them off septic systems.
Do you think eventually septic systems should all go away here in Florida?
I think so. Yes, I think that would be a good thing.
Frank, the one thing that didn't come up so far in any of the governor's statements about the environment, he hasn't mentioned climate change. What do you make of that?
Well, that's the number one issue. The number one problem in his whole analysis is a failure to address our hideous problem in the state, that we failed to address climate change. You know, he's starting to recognize that sea level rise exists, but he's not dealing with climate change, the sources of climate change, which is all the carbon that we put into the atmosphere through our dirty air, dirty water, that gets released then and then aggravates global warming. That in turn is threatening Florida, and he needs to get on the bandwagon for green clean energy.
The Tampa Bay area is one of the most at-risk places in the world for sea level rise.
That's right. We are in great danger. A lot of people say that we are the number one target for sea level rise, even in Florida. Some people say it's Miami. Some people say Tampa Bay. Certainly, if we get a major hurricane in this area, it could devastate the Tampa Bay and all of our communities.
You know, as I drive around places like, if you drive on Gandy Boulevard and you go from St. Petersburg to Tampa, you notice that they're putting in big chunks of concrete and bric-a-brac on the waterside, both the water sides of the road, as if the rising tides are wearing away at the land that leads from St. Petersburg to the Gandy Bridge. Is that an example of where rising sea levels are affecting us?
Absolutely. You know, all of those lowlands on both sides of the bay will be gone in 20, 30 years, and we may not be able to save them. You know, we're talking about saving really the rest of Tampa Bay area by addressing climate change. I think it may be too late to address those areas. We're going to be paying a lot of money to deal with adaptation to the climate change that is already being forced upon us.
Frank, if you were to give the governor a grade so far, I mean, well, let me just back up. How important is it that the legislature take up, if the governor has announced these plans, and some may work, others may not, but how important is it for the legislature to get on board with what the governor has outlined?
Well, the legislature needs to make the same acknowledgments that the governor made. They need to basically say that we need to address nutrient pollution. We need to put money into environmental protection. We need to take a stronger stand for land conservation. But we don't know what the program is that the governor is asking. They may need to come up with something stronger than what the governor asks. I just can't say at this point.
Just getting back to climate change, what should the governor say? What should a Florida governor be saying about climate change?
He should say that we need to move to 100% clean energy by the year 2050, that this state needs renewable energy. We need to invest in solar energy jobs. That is the wave of the future that helps our economy. It helps small businesses, it helps homeowners, and it will make our air much cleaner. We need the same thing with clean transportation. We need to move to much cleaner transportation for our cities, which will help to protect families and their health. Those are the kinds of things that he needs to do to attack climate change.
And Frank, one last question from me. Is there anything else that you'd like to point out about the new governor and his record on the environment so far?
I would point out that he had a bad record when he was in Congress. He voted against the environment 98% of the time. So, you know, the question is that indicative of what's really going to go on while he's governor? We really need to see what the details are of his plans. You know, maybe he's gotten religion and he will do great things. We're going to give him that opportunity. But we know that he was not good in the past and that he's going to have to make some real serious changes in his approach if he's going to truly deserve the label of being an environmentalist.
Well, Frank, thanks for coming on WMNF. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Frank.
All right. Take care.
Take care. That's Frank Jackalone, who is the Florida chapter director of the Sierra Club. And we've been talking about incoming Governor Ron DeSantis and his record on the environment. And this is WMNF 88.5 FM. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We're going to switch gears and open up the phone lines. We can talk about this issue if you want. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Dave in Gulfport says, and I probably should have read this, what would it take to return to the agreement made under Chris to purchase the sugar lands? Dave says that would be the best solution for the Everglades in many ways. I think that's going to take a move by the governor and the legislature. Tina writes this regarding septic tanks. She says the keys are on sewers now on Key Largo to Key West. And on more remote parts with acreage, they're on individual AWT packages, but those are few and far between now. It took over 20 years to get it all done. There is still controversy about the deep injection of AWT, though. We agree with sea level rise, especially practically the entire state should be AWT sewers and composting toilets, writes Tina in Brooksville. And here's an email from the 727 area code. Anonymous says, Mosaic is the key to climate change. They are acidifying the waters and allowing phosphate runoff into the waters. Yeah, Mosaic creates fertilizer that's used in this country and worldwide. 813-239-9663. We'll take a phone call or two, and then I want to talk about some of the other issues that are in the news today. Let's go to John, who's in Port Richey. John, you're on WMNF.
Hey, thanks for the show, Rob. The other day, you had a mayoral candidate on for Tampa. I think his name was Dick Greco Jr.
Yep, I had him on yesterday, yeah.
Right, yesterday. He mentioned that about the deep injection, and he made a comment there that was just so, like, just glossed over, which just amazed me, because he was saying about they're taking water now that they've treated that he wants to inject into the aquifer, that putting it into the bay, it has more, I think he said, more nutrients or more nitrogen than what probably they should be putting into the bay. And I thought that was kind of an interesting comment that he was saying that it may not be good to be putting in the bay because of the nitrogen, but he's going to put it into the aquifer.
Yeah. Well, and that's a we did a show, a series of shows about that last month.
We had
Darden Rice on, who's a city council member from St. Petersburg.
Right.
She's opposed to this idea. This is really a Bob Buckhorn proposal, mayor of Tampa proposal. And we had the head of public works on from the city of Tampa who was telling us why the plan is a good idea.
Yeah, well, my idea was, and I wanted to ask this the Sierra guy this, because he might know this more than I, because I'm not an environmentalist really or a scientist, even though I play one on TV. What happens if we take that water and pump it up north to where the aquifer actually recharges itself? Because I know that the aquifer has the two permeable barriers there, impermeable barriers, and the water comes in from up north. It seeps into there and recharges the aquifer. So why can't we pump that up into, like, reservoirs that would take that extremely well-treated water and then filter it through a natural filtration through the earth, and then put it back into the aquifer, as opposed to just pumping it directly into it? I would have liked to ask the guy from the Sierra Club about that idea.
Well, we'll do another show about it. I promise we're not going to give up on the environment here at WMNF.
Well, yeah. Bring that idea up.
Okay,
you can,
I will.
I don't know if
I will.
It's feasible. I know it's going to come down to money, because it all comes down to money. That's going to be the big thing. Do we have the money to build the pipeline to do that stuff? I guess it's cheaper just to drill a well and pump it down. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. I want to mention some of the other things that are going on around the country. The shutdown of the government is into its fifth week right now, and workers are missing a second paycheck today. The Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross, was on CNBC yesterday. We played the soundbite yesterday. I'm going to play it again. He was questioning why some employees had to use food banks when they could simply go and take out a loan. That would be the solution to their problem if they're hungry or they don't have enough money to pay their rent or their mortgage or their car payment. Here's our Commerce Secretary from the U.S., Wilbur Ross.
Secretary, but Mr. Secretary, there are reports that there are some federal workers who are going to homeless shelters to get food.
Well, I know they are, and I don't really quite understand why, because as I mentioned before, the obligations that they would undertake, say a borrowing from a bank or a credit union, are in effect federally guaranteed. So the 30 days of pay that some people will be out, there's no real reason why they shouldn't be able to get a loan against it. And we've seen a number of ads from financial institutions doing that.
All right. So should federal workers go to get a payday loan in order to tide them through? What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. President Trump was asked about this yesterday, and here's what he said.
Wilbur Ross said that he doesn't understand why federal workers need help getting food. Can you understand?
No, I haven't heard the statement, but I do understand that perhaps he should have said it differently. Local people know who they are when they go for groceries and everything else, and I think what Wilbur is probably trying to say is that they will work along. I know banks are working along. If you have mortgages, the mortgagees, the folks collecting the interest and all of those things, they work along. And that's what happens in time like this. They know the people. They've been dealing with them for years, and they work along. The grocery store. And I think that's probably what Wilbur Ross meant. But I haven't seen his statement, no. But he's done a great job. I will tell you that. Yes.
So do you think that banks and grocery stores will work along with you if you don't have money to pay your mortgage or your grocery bill right now? You think they'll work along with you? 813-239-9663. Larry Kudlow, the current White House economic advisor, was on C-SPAN this morning, and he was asked about all these federal employees on furlough with no pay, and here's how he described what they're doing.
They're coming out. Workers, they're showing up.
That's not volunteering if you're forced to work without pay. If you don't show up, you lose your job. So that's not volunteering. That's not what volunteering means.
You know what? I'm not even going to go there. You know what I'm saying. It's very clear. And you know what else? With respect to people who do have financial hardships, as someone was asking, they are coming to work and giving them the same 24/7 work they always did. And I will say to you, whatever semantic game you think you're going to play with me, and I'm usually an easygoing guy, give them credit. Okay? They honor us. They honor us by their service. I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat. I mean that sincerely. They honor us. Democrats have shut government down. All right? But you know what I'm saying. They honor us. And they do it because of their love for the country and the office of the presidency and presumably their allegiance to President Trump, but whatever, they're doing it. Give them some credit, you know? There's a lot of wonderful people in this country. There are a lot of wonderful people in this country, especially some of these young. I've become a great fan of the millennials. Thank you.
There's Larry Kudlow, the White House economic advisor on C-SPAN, just a short time ago, saying that the federal workers are honoring the president. They're going to work because they love the president, and they're volunteering to do their jobs for free. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. If you don't show up for your job, in some of these cases, you're going to be fired. But Kudlow says that they're volunteering to do their jobs for free. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And Patty Perkey and Frank Knox are staffing the phones. We're going to take some phone calls. And I want to talk about one other issue in just a moment. Let's go to Ron in Largo. Ron, you're on WMNF.
Hey, Rob. Great show, as always.
Thank you.
I think this is indicative of people who are uber wealthy, which most of these people in the cabinet are, to their knowledge of how everyday people live. They have no clue. They don't understand because they've never been in that position, I would say most of them. I don't know about you, but I've had some dealings with the credit card companies and mortgage companies over time, and they don't understand anything except for you not making your payment. Most credit card companies, if you don't make your payment on time, they jack you up to 28, 30% interest.
That's right. That's right.
Mortgage companies do the same thing. You're going to have a problem on your credit. So I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, and what about the president saying that you can work with your grocery store? Like, if I go into the big box grocery store, even though I might go in there every week and the cashiers know me, they're not going to say, oh, just take it for free. They're not going to say
you got... No, and they're not going to give you credit. They're going to tell you put it on your credit card or whatever.
So why would the president even say that?
Because he's never done that before. He is a privilege. He was born into wealth. I don't know if he's ever been into a grocery store in his life. Same with Wilbur Ross and Kudlow. I don't know about these people. Like I said, I think it's indicative that they don't understand what normal, everyday, working class... Well, I wouldn't even say middle class anymore. I would consider it to be working poor. What they have to go through on a day-to-day basis and what they have to do.
Yeah, 78% of the country right now works paycheck to paycheck.
Well, and like I say, that to me isn't middle class. That's working.
Yeah,
poor.
I agree with you. I was backing up what you said. I agree.
Yeah, and it's just amazing to me that people that support him, he was supposed to be for the working class and this and that. You cannot see the forest for the trees. I mean, open your eyes.
And how long can you go? How long could you go without receiving a paycheck before your credit history is damaged, that you go deeply in debt and start to borrow money you can't afford to borrow? How long before there's permanent damage to your household economy? How many paychecks can you miss?
Well, I think with your credit, it's you miss one and you've got problems.
Yeah.
Same with the mortgage companies. They don't like to see that. These corporations and these businesses are all about the money. They don't want to hear excuses. I don't think you've ever been able to call your mortgage company and go, hey, I'm going to be a little bit short this month. Or like you said, go to the grocery store, go to the Publix or something and say, hey, I don't have enough. Can you help me out here? No, that isn't working.
That's not going to work. All right, Ron, thanks a lot.
Right, thank you.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Captain Tim writes, I won't read that since it's not supposed to be read on the air because it's anonymous. All right, sorry about that. Let me read the next one. This is from Blanny. Blanny says, it's ironic, but Trump has essentially caused a strike against the very employees who by law cannot go out on strike. He's using Americans as hostages with no concern for their well-being. He's affecting our travel, our safety, our public services, in addition to the terrible cost to all government workers and recipients of government assistance. His administration is doing more to harm our country than any past terrorist action in the U.S. So let's call him what he is. President Trump is a terrorist, writes Blanny, and says Putin has got to be ecstatic, probably sitting in a cozy armchair, sipping on a premium vodka and toasting R-45. Let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, you're on. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, so much as usual, Rob. Happy Friday. But you know, the words in that interview that Wilbur Ross used, he said, I know, but I do not understand. That's what happens when you have this totally out of touch, uber wealthy, old as dirt person in there who has no clue what the American people have to deal with.
Yeah, he's worth $700 million.
Yeah, worth that much to who? Let me ask you, and please, please, you Trump supporters out there, I implore you to call in and explain this one to all of us snowflakes, all of us lefties that are out to destroy this country. Please call in and explain why this is a good thing.
All right, let's
thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Andy. Let's see. We've got an open line. You can do that right now. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, thanks for calling in.
Yes. I was sitting in my bed last night when I heard that. It was around 11 o'clock and it was playing on the news what Wilbur Ross said. I was, seriously, Rob, I was appalled. It really touched me deep. I was like, oh my God, you mean to tell me I would have to go? And I heard the interest rate is like around 9%.
Yeah, if you go to a payday loan place, you just need a short-term loan. They're going to jack you. They're going to hijack you. It's highway robbery.
Right, and he was saying that he didn't understand why they was doing that. I would not go to get a loan on work that I've already done. This is the closest, really, that people have probably been to slavery, except that they can quit. But they would have to find another job, and some of the people who are not going to get paid at all. I could not believe that, and it is true. The people that are really still his base that stand with him because of this. I mean, after this right here, their minds are gone. If they cannot say I'm against this, they will. It would have to be almost like he said. He would have to go down Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody for them to come over.
Yeah, well, let's hope a Trump supporter does call up today and explain why this is all okay. Gino, thank you.
Right.
All right. 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. And let's go to Ted in Ellenton, who's been holding for a while. Ted, what do you got to say? All right. We might have lost Ted. All right. Let's go to Richard in St. Petersburg. Hey, Richard, you're on MNF.
Yes, when you played the clip of Trump earlier where he said he had not heard the comment, but he thought that was so that kind of says he heard the comment. He contradicted himself.
Yeah, I thought he was ready for that question. He had an answer. Although I didn't, I thought that the answer was weird, to say that you can talk to your grocery store or your mortgage company. Maybe if you're a millionaire or a billionaire president, you could talk to your mortgage company. But I don't think the average $45,000 a year or $65,000 a year person can talk to their mortgage company and get it put off for 3 or 4 months.
But my question is like people like a Senate Majority Leader and a lot of these other staunch congressional supporters, so on and so forth, how many of them actually taken the trouble to stop by a food bank and see what's actually happening or to take the trouble to talk to some of the federal employees that are dealing with the situation?
Yeah, I'll bet almost zero. I mean, maybe some have, but I'll bet, at least on the Republican side, I'll bet it's zero. And that's not a slam against Republicans. I think that they know what's going on, and they just don't want to feel the guilt of having to see what's going on.
And yeah, well, so hopefully, sadly enough, this might be the thing to give some of them the courage to go ahead and actually start doing and working towards the country instead of for a political party and really...
Yeah, the question
not
is
this agenda, and both parties are doing it.
The question is really is the wall so important that you're going to starve American families, you're going to disrupt American air travel, you're going to not pay the Coast Guard, yet the Coast Guard is our coastal protection. Is that 200 or 400 miles of wall, whatever he's going to get with his $5 billion, is that so important that you're going to hurt all these families around the U.S.?
In his mind, yes, but in the reality of most people, absolutely not. But we've had that discussion about his sense of reality too many times. But I'll let somebody else get on.
All right, Richard, thanks a lot. We got an open line, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Hi, Kevin. You're on WMNF.
Hey, Rob. Thank you for taking my call. Unfortunately, I can't play the role of a Trump supporter here today, but I do think that... I haven't heard anybody mention this regarding what Kudlow and Ross said. If we believe President Trump, he has already drained the swamp, apparently, then my question is, what do we call people like Wilbur Ross and Kudlow and these guys that are actual, policymakers that are so out of touch? I mean, are they the new swamp thing? It's so obvious that these people are out of touch with reality that I don't want to, waste too much time talking about it. But the thing about if the people believe that Trump is going to help, you know, raise them up out of poverty or working paycheck to paycheck. Why can't they see that these kind of people aren't really capable of understanding, you know, where most people are coming from? And you know, when Bush, I mean, when Bush Sr. had his moment about the grocery store, I don't know if we can remember back then, but I think it was something to do with a scanner.
Yeah, he did not know what a scanner was.
Right.
And one of the Bushes didn't know how much a gallon of milk cost.
And doesn't that kind of remind you of Trump saying that, you know, just go down there and, you know, the local grocery store will work it out with you?
Andy Hardy days, I mean, if you go back to the 30s and you have a small local grocery store, maybe that would have happened. You must have watched too many movies on TV.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say is totally different, but the other thing Trump has said was that, you know, the whole Mueller investigation, the Russia thing, there's nothing there. There's no there, and it's a witch hunt. And, you know, nothing to do with anything. Well, we got 30 arrests, 8 convictions, and it's still ongoing. So I'm sure that I'm going to go ahead and play a Trump supporter now on this issue and basically say that it's because, you know, they just decided not to go after Hillary. And obviously, you know, the emails were a much bigger issue. So, you know, if they would just, you know, put their forces to the good of arresting Hillary, then maybe this will all be rectified.
Maybe. All right, Kevin, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
You know, the Roger Stone indictment is interesting, and I was going to try to get to it because Sarah Sanders was on CNN this morning and had a little bit of trouble answering questions. But here is perhaps out of the Roger Stone indictment and arrest this morning, here is perhaps the central question. Stone is accused of discussing WikiLeaks activities with, quote, a senior Trump campaign officials or senior Trump campaign officials in 2016. So the question is, who are those officials? And the indictment of Stone states that during the summer of 2016, Stone spoke to senior Trump campaign officials about Organization One, which is WikiLeaks, and information it might have had that would be damaging to the Clinton campaign. Stone was contacted by senior Trump campaign officials to inquire about future releases by Organization One. By in or around early 2016, Stone was claiming both publicly and privately to have communicated with Organization One. So the question is, how high up does this go within the Trump world? And we don't know who those Trump campaign officials are. Hopefully we'll learn soon. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Robert in Palm Harbor. Hey, Robert, you're on WMNF.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have one, and I enjoy your show. I have just one quick comment about what Kudlow said, which shows that he's out of touch. He said these people are volunteering.
That's right.
But that's actually against the law. You can't make a paid employee volunteer. It's against federal law.
Ah, thanks a lot. Robert, you're not an attorney by any chance, are you?
No, but I ran a pretty major organization with the CEO and was familiar with the work laws.
Yeah, you know that you can't force your employees to work.
That's right.
For free, yeah. All right, Robert, that's a great point. Thank you for making it.
Okay, take care.
All right, take care. 813-239-9663, and we will open it up. If you are a Trump supporter, call us up. So far, we've not had one today. Frequently, we have Trump supporters, though. Let's go to Danny in Tampa. Danny, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning, Rob. Yes, I'm watching it right now that he is charged, Stone is charged with witness tampering, obstruction of justice, and giving false statements. And he's supposed to make a statement any minute now. This is just, of course, the White House has denied it's got anything to do with Trump, of course. As far as the statement, Larry Kudlow yesterday, there was a clip yesterday, you didn't play it, that a reporter, among what we played, there was a reporter who asked him a question right after that. I don't know if you saw it, but he told him, he says, how can these people, Kudlow says, these people are volunteering, they're showing up, and the reporter says, how can they be volunteers if they're expected to be paid? Volunteers don't expect to be paid. So how can you say that they're volunteering? You know, in other words, coming to work. And Kudlow look at him, and Kudlow goes, you know what? I'm not even going to go there.
Yeah, that was a soundbite I played. I did play that.
Oh Oh, you did?
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
That's
okay.
I must have not heard that part of it, right? Yeah. Okay. And as far as Wilbur Ross and these people, this just goes to show you the lack of empathy and this administration starting from Trump down. And it's and look at the people like Roger Stone, who this morning, Anna Navarro on The View, she was overjoyed by him being arrested. Even Meghan McCain said Anna Navarro says he is such a nasty man that he was putting on his Twitter account, blasting people, obscene things about him, about herself. He said, quote, Anna Navarro, and she was quoting, is fat, stupid, and blanking Al Cardenas. Can you believe that he said that? And she looks at the camera and says, now Bob Mueller is blanking you. You know, Anna Navarro won't take...
Ouch. Ouch.
It doesn't take anything from anybody. You know?
All right. All right, Danny. Thanks a lot.
You have a great weekend.
All right. You too. Thanks, Danny. You know, Roger Stone was a guest on this radio show during the 2016 campaign. Maybe I'll pull out that old interview and play it back for you. But he did agree to come on as a guest on this show. We didn't know anything about Russian involvement during the time that I was interviewing him in 2016. But he had interesting things to say about how to divide the Democratic Party. Really sharp stuff, I thought. He's a Republican, so that's his job. Here's Anonymous writing, yeah, I'm going to go down to Publix or Aldi's and tell them just to put the groceries on my tab, writes Anonymous. And then here's another one that says, email says, one thing I like about DeSantis is that he has a middle-class background. He's not an out-of-touch millionaire greedy guy. Writes Anonymous. And then, let's see. Trying to read some of the emails. Some people are sending me links. It's hard to even open up a link while I'm doing a show. Elio writes this, people are missing all of the good Chump, Kudlow, Ross, and the rest are doing. They are opening the country's eyes to what the Republican Party stands for. They're helping to make the party a permanent minority party, writes Elio. Elio, thank you for that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I was going to try to play some of what Sarah Sanders said on CNN this morning because she had a hard time answering questions about the Roger Stone indictment, but we may not get to it. Let's go to Fran in Largo. Fran, welcome to WMNF. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Rob. Thank you. Now, don't laugh at me over this, but I've been kicking this little idea around in my head since, last week. But it was in the middle of that Los Angeles teacher strike, and they said that the Honey Baked Ham Company was given free ham sandwiches to the teachers, you know, to help keep them going. And it occurred to me, not just about the teachers, but with what's happened with this government shutdown and people needing things so much and can't afford anything, wouldn't it be wonderful if some kind of a barter trade system got off the ground through this? Wouldn't that be terrific? I mean, in terms of people actually surviving, I'll do this for you if you do this for me. Eliminate the money part of it, if that would be possible. I know it's a giant undertaking, and you know, just talking about ham sandwiches. But I thought giving the teachers ham sandwiches. What if the teacher said, "Okay, we'll teach your kids for ham sandwiches or something like that"? Yeah, that kind of an idea. I know it sounds silly in a way, but it's something to think about.
Well, I'll bet that's going on in an informal way already, where people are going through their closets right now and figuring out what can they get rid of and maybe trading it, or maybe taking it down to the thrift shop.
Something that would just give a jolt to that stock market and all the shareholders and these rich, I'm going to say nasty thing, these rich douchebags that think they own everybody. The oil companies and the credit card lenders and the banks and the insurance companies, gives them a jolt. So it's a crazy idea, but it would be wonderful if something like that could get off the ground.
All right, Fran, thanks a lot. Thank you. I know there are people that have tried to start barter systems here in the Tampa Bay area, and we've had them on. We've had several interviews about trying to do that. I don't know how successful they are at this day. Amy in St. Pete writes, furloughed workers, even if I did have a savings account to use to pay my bills, why would I want to do that? Will these government workers be reimbursed? Well, let's hope they're all reimbursed for these terrible weeks without pay. BDU writes, Trump did drain the swamp, but he made a cesspool out of it, writes BDU. And then Tony writes this, I was doing my laundry at a beach laundromat, and the owners of the small local motels are concerned about winter vacation cancellations and the slowdown due to the shutdown. They're worried about the negative effects of the trickle-down economy, writes Tom. Tom, thanks for pointing that out. I mean, we are heavily dependent on middle-class people who get a few days off for spring break or Easter holiday or some of the holidays in the spring, come down for spring training. We're heavily dependent on that. And if this shutdown is affecting their ability to take that short vacation, it is going to have a ripple effect here in the Bay Area among all the restaurants and hotels and motels on the beach. Let's go to Dave in Tampa. Hey, Dave, you're on M&F.
Hey, good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
This idea that Wilbur Ross is floating, that federal workers ought to go out and get a loan. I mean, I think the interviewer should have asked, okay, so you're talking about unsecured credit, which carries an unusually high interest rate in most cases, assuming these people would qualify at all. You're going to ask them to go to the likes of Wells Fargo, which is so well known for its being so friendly to consumers, and ask for unsecured credit, which is going to come at a premium, which in effect, what you're talking about, bottom line, is incurring new costs on these folks.
Or even just go down to a payday loan place. I mean, that's where a lot of people are going to go. But a payday loan place is going to charge you an arm and a leg, as Gino told us a few minutes ago. I mean, you're right. I mean, Wilbur Ross has a stellar credit rating because he's got $700 million. He owns $700 million. So his credit is not bad. Yours and mine, because we work paycheck to paycheck, if we stop paying our mortgage or our car payment or stop paying our phone bill, there goes our credit rating, and the interest rates go up every time we borrow. I mean, Wilbur Ross so glibly said that, and he has no idea what it's like to work paycheck to paycheck.
Exactly. And you know, not only that, but it's sort of a de facto pay cut because you're forcing them to pay more to live, you know.
You're adding the cost of the interest, yeah.
Yeah, and that's they get to take a pay cut so that Donald Trump can use them as a political football because they love the president so much, according to Kudlow.
And well, I keep waiting for these.
You know, it's hard for me.
I wake up
each morning and kind of wonder whether I've somehow fallen into some kind of time warp of absurdity or something. It's just that people actually buy this garbage as reasonable is the most amazing thing of all.
Have you seen that picture of Rod Serling standing in front of President Trump in the Oval Office? Rod Serling from the Twilight Zone.
No, I'll have to Google that.
Yeah, Google it. If you feel like you're waking up in a nightmare, just take a look on Google. I've got it if people want to see it. It's all over the internet. All right, Dave, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks a lot.
Good to hear from you. And let's go to Bill in Homosassa. Hey, Bill, you're on.
Bob,
Bill.
How many people out of that 800,000 do you think has got a 700 beacon score?
I think zero.
Well, and here's the other part. All this damage get done to them. AmScot, all these payday loan places are probably big lobbyists for Trump.
There is no doubt about that.
They're sucking it in, buddy, right and left. And I'm like the other guy that said, I can't believe these people are that blind, this country. It's insane. But look the damage they're doing to them poor people. Half of them probably already in a buy here, pay here, car lot, and those conditions, buddy, when you buy a car there, you mess the lick, it's over. They come and get it.
Yep.
No questions asked.
Yep.
None.
It's often said the poor pay more. You know,
always.
Yeah.
And it's just there's that stone down there in Fort Myers. Look at the money being wasted down there on that. I like to know what it's cost us for that guy to be in office. Between the Mar-a-Lago trips and all the other crap. Insane. Totally insane.
All right.
That 37% needs to have an IQ check immediately.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot. I mean, I was waiting for our first Trump phone call today. We never got it. I think I took almost everybody except Carlos is still hanging on. Tom in Sarasota says, it seems like Mueller is doing a pretty good job of cleaning the swamp. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments that you record in a moment on Monday at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned now for Janelle Irwin. She's coming up next right here on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. She's hosting the Midpoint program today. And again, thanks to Patty Perkey and Frank Knox for being our phone producers. We're going to check in with NPR and find out what the latest news is right now.